Gittin Perik Hey Mishnah Ches 5:8. The Mishnah now, as it wraps up the Perik, has a couple of Mishnayos with other Takanos that are for Mipnei Darchei Shalom, for the sake of promoting peace, as opposed to Tikkunei Olam, making the world a better place. So we have to differentiate between the two. But here, this is specifically regarding peaceful relations. So these are various areas of life where Chazal anticipated people would come to argue and fight. And to prevent that, they therefore lay down certain rules to prevent that from happening. So here the Mishnah starts out. Each of the various cases we'll have to take in turn. The first is Ve'el Dvarim Amru B'pnei Darchei Shalom. These are the things the rabbis enacted for the sake of promoting peace. The first is Kohen Kor Rishon Va'ach Rav Levi Va'ach Rav Yisrael B'pnei Darchei Shalom. The first is that when a person gets an aliyah in shul, and at the time of the Mishnah, the person who got aliyah actually did the reading, not just said the brachos, which is why it says kore, he reads. So really, midoraisa, it should be going in order of whoever is the biggest talmid chacham over there, should get priority. The problem is people just come to, if there's not a clear hierarchy, the people just come to fight over who it is and who gets a chance to go. And therefore the rabbis said from the outset, no, we're going to have Cohen read the first aliyah, then Levi the second, and Yisrael the third, to minimize the fighting over who gets the chance. Now the truth is that really midoraisa, the pasuk says v'kidashto, you will sanctify him, the Kohen, kadosh yelach lach, he'll be holy to you, which means that there's a mitzvah d'oraisa, one of the Targum mitzvahs, to accord honor to the Kohen, and therefore really by rights, if the Kohen is on equal footing in terms of his Torah knowledge with other non-Kohanim there in the minyan, the Kohen really should be able to go first and should go first midin d'oraisa as opposed to some takana of Darkei Shalom. The problem is that the Kohen is always within his rights to be mochel on his kavod, to forego that honor, and in which case he would give his aliyah to somebody else, and that is where the recipe for disaster comes in. People could fight over who should be getting it if the Kohen's handing it over, and why you're giving it to him and not to me. Therefore the rabbi said, no, Kohen goes first. Following that, it's the Levi. Now, the Levi really is going second for the sake of sort of honoring the Kohen because they're from the same Shevet. And then the Yisrael comes third. Now, if there is no Kohen, then really the Levi doesn't have any particular priority. In fact, many learn that the Levi Davka shouldn't go if there's no Kohen. So it's Kohen, and then if there's no Levi, then Kohen, the same Kohen again, the second time, because he really is, you know, he's from Sheva Levi anyways. If there's no Kohen, then it would just be three Yisraelim, whatever it is, no giving special treatment to the Levi, according to most. According to everyone, there's no special treatment, and according to most, he shouldn't even get a chance to go up in the first place, give it to Yisrael, stop any confusion. Now, the truth is that the rabbis enact this where people are likely to fight, which it sounds to be, according to the Gemara, only on Shabbos and Yom Tov, when like, the crowds really show up to shul. But the universal custom has been that it applies to Monday and Thursday as well. And similarly, although really Me'ikra Din, if you have a non-Kohen who is a Talmud Chacham and you know stands above other Kohanim in the minyan, really Mid-Oraisa, he should go first. But notwithstanding that the universal custom has become that it's the Kohen who goes first, then Levi and Yisrael, and we don't really look at their stature. And then Shlishi is given, you know, as a kavod to the Talmud Chacham in the room, typically. Okay. Next, the next case, it's like unrelated to the previous, but again, it's another Takana Mipnei Darchei Shalom, is Ma'arvin Bebayis Yashan. The Eruv, meaning the box of matzahs, goes in the old house, literally, Mipnei Darchei Shalom, for the sake of peace. So the case here is as follows. Eruvei Chatzeros, which is one of the three different kinds of Eruvin that Chazal set up. The other two being the Eruv Tavshilin and the Eruv Tchumen, both of which have nothing to do with this whatsoever. Here we're talking about, again, the Eruv Chatzeros. And the idea is as follows, that mid-oraisa one may not carry from a private domain and transfer something to a public domain, Rishos HaRabim, or vice versa, taking in from the Rishos HaRabim to the Rishos HaYachid. Mid-Rabbanan, even if you have two Rishos HaYachid, two private domains, however they're defined, but one is like a private residence, your own private home, let's say, and the second one is like a shared, but still halachically private domain. So, for example, like the foyer of the apartment building. So there, it sort of feels like a public place, although it has mechitzas on all sides. It's walled in, so really it's Rosh Hashanah. And therefore, midah oraisa, you could carry from your apartment into the shared living space of the apartment building. Midah rabban, you cannot unless you first set up the Eruv Chatzeros. And the Eruv Chatzeros basically is bread, which is done specifically like a bread or matzah, which is put in one person's home, the apartment, and then it's as if there's a consortium, all the residents kind of live together, partaking and being unified by this bread. So someone's apartment gets the box of matzahs, is how it's typically done. So our point of a mishnah here is that if there's one particular apartment, which is the place where you always put the matzahs, then you have to keep on putting it there, even if, let's say, the person who in apartment 3B, which had the matzah all along, he's moved out. So the matzah should still go into apartment 3B again. And the Gemara says the reason why people shouldn't come to be choshed one another, to suspect one another of bad behavior, and then come to argue. So two basic approaches, what kind of bad behavior we're talking about. Some learn the issue is, if there's always the, you know, the box of matzahs for the Erev in apartment 3B, and this week it's not there, people will say, hey, they stopped doing their halachas properly, they're breaking the din of Erev Chatzeros and doing Chatzam and the Rabbanan, and they'll fight about that. Others learn the issue is, if you're always putting it into, you know, apartment 3B, and then you stop, people think, oh, it's because you think that the residents of apartment 3B are going to steal your matzahs. And again, that will lead to fighting. All this applies where it's, as the Mishnah says, bias yashan, the old place, they always do it. But if it just is there sometimes and sometimes not, or just been there for 1 or 2 weeks, that certainly would not establish the halacha. But once it's always going there, it has to continue to go there because of darchei shalom. Okay, next, a new din here. This is talking about if you have an irrigation canal, an amas amayim. So what happened is in the time of Chazal, they didn't have sprinklers. So how did they irrigate their fields? They had a water source, like a river, or let's say, or a spring, and then they would have like a sluice, like a conduit, that would take that water and take it, you know, through the fields, and people would then divert water from the main ama, the main sluice, to, you know, irrigate and water their fields. So the water's going to run out eventually. So what people had is they had boros. A bor is a cistern where they would store water for later. Now really, mid oraisa, everyone along the length of the irrigation canal has equal rights to that water, and therefore there's no reason why Mr. A should have rights over Mr. B in terms of who gets to fill their cistern first. But obviously, the people who are upstream, if they fill their cistern first, that means the people downstream don't get water. So there was ongoing fighting about who gets water and who has rights to it, and although Midoraisa, everyone has equal rights, the rabbis are trying to set up something here where Midorabanan at least has a clear hierarchy, and that way people won't fight because they know the pecking order. So the Mishnah here says, Bor Shehu Karov La'ama Mismala Rishon. The simple reading of this is, the cistern which is closer to the, meaning upstream, closer to the source of the water of the irrigation canal, that cistern gets to be filled first. Mipnei Darkei Shalom. The point was just again like setting up any rules makes it that no one's fighting anymore because they understand their rules to follow. The problem is here that there's actually Machlokus Amorayim. Do we read the Mishnah to mean that people who are most upstream get to go first, or actually people who are most downstream get to go first? The latter would make a little more sense because they get the water last. They get to fill up their system first, and as it dries up, they'll, you know, have a reservoir and so on for later. But the simple reading of the mission is like the other way around. The people upstream, whatever it is, the din, I don't call it lamaisa, I don't know who does this lamaisa today, really is kind of like a bit of a free-for-all, and therefore this, meaning called alam glavar, whoever takes the water gets the water, and therefore this takana didn't work out so well, I don't think, practically speaking. Next, you have mutsudos chaya va'ofos v'dagim. If someone sets up a trap in the forest to catch himself some live animals, chayos, wild animals, ofos, birds, dagim, fish. So the truth is, if you set up a trap, like a snare or a net, that doesn't have a base kibul, it doesn't have like a reservoir receptacle, so then even though you've sort of like caught this bird by its foot, the bird, which was a wild animal before, doesn't technically belong to you. You have nothing that's like acquired it for yours. It's just a trap bird in your trap. And that happened the case, really, midoraisa, if someone helps himself to that bird, He's not really stealing from you. He's just messing you up, but you don't really have rights to the bird yet. You haven't taken ownership of it. Then in contrast to if the trap itself had some kind of base kibbutz, like a receptacle in an area, and it's holding things. So if you have like, you know, I don't know, fish somehow are falling into a fish tank of yours you've set up over like, I don't know, what, a waterfall or something. So what's in the fish tank would certainly belong to you, Madaraisa. But if it's just ensnared in a way that there's no base kibbutz on a hook or something, so then it would not belong to you yet. So the rabbis are saying, even though it doesn't technically belong to you, other people may not take it because obviously, well, that might be technically within their rights, Madaraisa. It's going to lead to a lot of fighting if I set out traps and you steal the fish I'm catching on my hooks. Okay, so that's what it says here, that yesh behem gezel, we treat it as if it's there's theft, but made darkei shalom, for the sake of promoting peace. And while that's true, just know that if someone would, you know, steal the fish off my hook while he's violating what the rabbis are saying to not do, I couldn't sue him and get it back because it's not technically gezel. Okay? That said, Rabbi Yossi Omer gezel gamor. Rabbi Yossi says, no, it is gezel. It's only rabbinic gezel, rabbinic theft. Midoraisa, I can't, it's not, since you didn't take an ownership of it, me taking off your hook wouldn't make it me an actual Doraisa thief. But Midorabban, I am a thief, meaning according to Rabbi Yossi, if someone stole someone else's fish off his hook, so then it would be a gezel Midorabban, and he could sue him and get the fish back. But the halacha is not like Rabbi Yossi. Halacha is like Tanakama, so really, although you're doing the wrong thing by taking the entrapped animal that doesn't belong to you, yet still, it's not legally enforceable in a bezdin. Similarly, mitzias cheresh shota v'katan. If you have a cheresh, the deaf mute, the shota, the mentally incompetent person, or the katan, the child. So since, as we said in the previous mission even, that they haven't got the ability to effect legal transactions, they, if they find something and pick it up, it really hasn't become theirs yet. So the cheresh shota or katan who picks up 50 shekels blowing in the breeze, really it's still a hefker, ownerless 50 shekels, and somebody else can come and snatch out of the kid's hand, midoraisa. However, yesh behen mishum gezel, the rabbi said, no, you can't do that. It's like, don't do that. It's like as if it's being stolen. Always, of course, people will come to fight over who gets the money and their kids getting stuff ripped out of their hands, as well as their deaf mute and shota friends. Oh, that's Mepeh Dorachei Shalom for the sake of reporting peace. But again, according to the Tanakama, if someone did it, since the child, let's say, hasn't really acquired the 50 shekels, he couldn't get it back, or his father couldn't get it back for him, in Bezdin. Was Rabbi Yossi Omer Gezel Gomer? Rabbi Yossi says, no, the rabbi said it is stealing, and therefore you actually could get it back in Bezdin, but the halacha is not like Rabbi Yossi. Next, you have the Ani HaMenakef Barosh HaZayas. You have a poor person who's climbed up into an olive tree, and he's like knocking down or cutting down the olives off the tree. They've been left as, let's say, peya. So if he didn't pick up the olives with his own hands, and they like kind of fall to the ground, so technically he hasn't acquired them yet, so therefore those hefker ownless olives remain hefker now that they're on the ground under the tree, even though he's doing all the work to get them out of the tree. And therefore someone else might want to, you know, take a shortcut and collect what's falling beneath the poor man in the tree and collect, harvest the fallen olives. That's not, of course, going to make the Ani up top doing all the work be very, very happy. And therefore the rabbi said, don't do that. If the Ani's up top of the tree knocking down or cutting off the olives, masha tachtav gezel, the other person, if he would take the olives that have fallen beneath to the bottom of the tree, he is, it's as if he is stealing. Therefore, he cannot do it. Even though technically midoraisa, the olives don't belong to anybody yet, he's going to make a big fight if this guy comes and helps himself to those olives. Rabbi Yossi Omer Gezel Gomer. Rabbi Yossi says, no, already the rabbi said it's like stealing midoraisa. Excuse me, still midorabanan, but it's enforceable, meaning the ani can kick bezin and say, listen, the rabbi said you can't do it, so now you have to give it back to me. But again, the halacha is not like Rabbi Yossi. And finally, Eime machin biyad aniye goyim, Beleket Shechopea Midarche Shalom. If you're a Jew and you've left out your gift to the poor, you're leaving out for poor Jews. So Leket is like the forgotten, is like the stalks that fall as you're harvesting. Shicha is the forgotten bundles as you're collecting into the main, you know, the main threshing floor. And Peah is the corner of your field and that you're not harvesting, leaving it for the poor to harvest themselves. Now, The pasuk says, La'ani v'la'ger ta'azovosam. He will leave them for the ani and the ger, the poor person and the ger. But the ger here doesn't mean a ger toshav, a non-Jewish resident of the land. It means a ger tzedek, a convert who has no one to support him in society. So really, midoraisa, you don't leave things for non-Jews, even if they're geri toshav, even if they keep the Shev Mitzvah B'nei Noach. But the Mishnah here is saying, okay, for the sake of promoting peace, we're going to leave and let the non-Jewish people who are poor also participate in the gifts of the poor. Otherwise, people say, what kind of terrible behavior is this, not leaving and taking care of the poor non-Jews as well? And the Gemara says that doesn't just apply for charity. If you're providing charity, you can provide the charity to non-Jews as well as you're providing it for Jews, but also things like visiting the sick and burying the dead. Also, again, Jews should participate in the visiting or burying of the Gentiles as do the Jews, again, because if you don't do that, people will think Jews are terrible people, come to fight with them, and that would be terrible, and therefore, for the sake of Darchei Shalom, we make sure that the non-Jews are taken care of as well.